God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
When the God of the universe created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. The Lord spoke. He said, "Let there be light." Because we believe, we speak about the happenings in this world, mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ and his kingdom. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome to A Disciple's View. I am the Mockingbird Media absolutely loves stories of firestorms in states like California, particularly in areas that surround Hollywood. Does it make it less important for us to pray for the people who are going through this? It's simply a pattern. There are plenty of states that live with things like this from time to time. Most of them blue states, where policies have led to making it nearly impossible to police forests the right way. California is an infrastructure poor country. Yes, country. It has no comparison to the United States of America. It long ago departed anything like our Constitution. Long ago departed that. And it's not less important for us to pray for the people who are going through this. The Mockingbird Media, even Fox, which I count as somewhat Mockingbird, better than most, wants us to know that some of the celebrity mansions have been reduced to ashes. I hope the celebrities lived. I do. I hope their kids lived. I don't particularly care that it's a famous person's mansion. I don't think we should care. I think there is a lesson here, a lesson that we should take into full account. I read this on Fox: wildfires turn deadly as fire chief sends warning to residents forced to leave everything behind. I saw that the fire department there, brave men and women walking into the flames. I see that we have apparently lost first responders. Of course, we must pray for their families, for the souls of those who've been lost. But I think that there is another warning here, one that we should heed. Residents fleeing raging wildfires forced to ditch their cars and run for their lives. Utterly terrifying and temporal. I once watched a brief film of people who lived through such a fire in California and their attempts to flee, to find this road and that road blocked, to smell the tires on their cars melting. I watched in horror as a young woman, a mother, was attempting to get her kids out. The ash had turned the sky to darker than midnight. Flames alight, her rearview mirror melting. And she's in this moment of desperation. And there comes her husband in his own truck. He pops out, gets into her car. He knew a way out. I think there's another lesson here that we should all heed. As I'm watching this, I'm remembering some of the fires through which I've lived. It used to be fire season from time to time in Eastern Washington. I've told you the story about my grandpa refusing to heed the directions of the firefighters because he needed to get up to the mountain to rescue my cousins. I went with him. Grandpa just simply knew another way up, and it was a rescue. But I'm also reminded of something else, and this is where I want to bridge into the spiritual lesson, because I think it's vital for us to be able to explain Christ's propitiation for our sins to people who puzzle over it. So let me bridge this way. My mother-in-law is a very nice woman. She is a good-hearted woman. She did what she could to raise my wife in the way that she could, with a ton of challenges and some really brutal mistakes. She's also an optimist over everything. One time she decided to take us driving up into the mountains, and my little girl was probably maybe 2 years old. We were visiting in Utah, and she simply wanted to go to see the canyons. So we went driving up the canyons, and there was smoke, a lot of it. And we turned up this mountain road, and there were firefighters fighting a fire on the side of the street. Not street, it was a dirt road. And I said to my mother-in-law, hey, we got to turn around. Fire goes uphill. No, we'll be fine. We're going way up here. But so is the fire. No. So we drove up to the top of the mountain, or near it. All the while I was saying, we need to turn back. Is there another way out of here? Is there a road off the backside of this mountain? I don't know. We'll just go up and look and then go back down. And everything in my gut said, no, you should actually reach like from the back seat up and pull the emergency brake and get out of here. You should say, hey, I demand it. No, stop. We're getting out. I didn't do that. We got up to the view she wanted us to have. I looked down and now I could see flame. I said, we're leaving now. No. I said, use her name. No, you can stay, but I'm leaving with my child and my wife. So we did. She drove, we went down, and the firefighters were astonished that we were up there, urgently waving us down the hill. We could feel the heat from the flames on the right side of the vehicle, the passenger side. We could feel it, all of us. We got home to her house, and the people on the left side of the car started to get out. The people on the right side couldn't get out. The molding of the car had melted. The doors were shut permanently. The rearview mirror was melted, and her tires were melted and hadn't exploded, thank God. The paint was destroyed. Now, this isn't a show to blame my mother-in-law. That's not my intent. My intent was that there is a clear warning. In California, we've seen the power of what God designed into our world can do. Now, that's a cliche. Moments like this have us focus on, wow, we are really, really not that powerful. God is all powerful, but there's something else. All around us, there are warning signs, I think. Every generation thinks it's the end times. Everyone does. No one knows the time or the day. I certainly don't, nor do you. But there's warning signs all around us. The fact that the world is now finally becoming aware of the rape and grooming scandal, grooming and rape scandals and murder scandals in the UK, with these largely Pakistani men having groomed and raped up to 250,000 girls. That's just extrapolative data based upon the 1,400 cases about which we're aware. I mean, that's bad. What's far worse is that it was actively hidden. Decidedly, purposely hidden from people. Victims of rape put in jail for being 11, naked, and intoxicated, being held in a house by 7 adult Pakistani males. The girls put in jail, not the men. They weren't even asked a question. The signs are all around us. Churches falling to heretics. The Bible being changed. I mean, it can't be changed, but the teaching of it being changed. All around us are signs. The worship of the false god of gender, the enchantress, she was a demon. Tradition tells us that she had made the promise that she could make you any gender, just your heart's desire. All around us, there's these signs. But what about the fire? Now, there is this method of describing hell, this fire and brimstone. This is what hell will be like. Perhaps that's accurate. It's very accurate to say that you'll be apart from the fruit of the Spirit forever. But I'd rather focus on fire and redemption. Fire and redemption. A lot of people are watching aghast the ongoing fires in California, and it is dystopian to see a place often viewed as almost like paradise on earth burning. I mean, it's a city. How is this happening? It's a series of cities. Yep, there's the ignorance or the refusal to focus on infrastructure, etc. But I want to focus on the firefighters with a metaphor. There's a great young pastor in training at our church. His name is Bill Krause Jr. And Bill, the other day during the youth portion of the program, he gave a sermon inspired by something an older pastor told him. And it has to do with Christ and the propitiation for sins, the payment we can't provide. And he told this story. In a small town, there was a horrible fire, and a farmhouse began to burn. And the fire took over the lower parts of the house. The parents lost their lives. The fire just about consumed the house. The firefighters showed up to neighbors screaming, "There's a child inside. There's a child." One of the firefighters ran in to the house, yelling the boy's name, yelling for him. He searched throughout the house as beams fell. The bodies of the parents already now departed. He ran upstairs, yelling for the boy, yelling for him, searching every room, every bathroom. In the last room he searched, he was about to leave when he observed a closet. He ran over to the closet, and there, kneeling under his blanket with his stuffed animal, was a little boy. The firefighter rushed to him. The boy was in tears. The firefighter picked him up in his strong arms. The boy was exposed to the flames. The firefighter removed his coat, wrapped the boy up in it, put around him as much of the coat as he could, focusing to make sure that it was the boy who was most shielded. And then he began running out of the house, his arms exposed to the flames, burning. But the little boy safe. When he'd gotten him out and the boy had been saved, weeks later there was a court hearing as to what to do with this little boy. Small town, everybody knew him. So people began appearing before this judge. One man, a rich man, appeared and said, "I'll give the boy everything he'll ever want. He'll never hurt for a thing. If he wants college, he'll have that. Absolute financial security." The judge said, "Thank you." Another man appeared, a farmer. "I'll teach the boy the value of hard work. I got plenty of fields for him to learn to work in. I'll teach him husbandry. He'll have a good career. He'll know the value of labor." The judge said, "Thank you." A woman who was a baker said, "I've got financial means, my own business he can inherit, and he'll learn the love that only a mother can give." And the judge was about to make his decision when another man stood in a dark suit. He walked towards the judge and he lifted the sleeves of his jacket, and there were his burned arms, skin damaged beyond recognition, fingers shrunken. He held his arms out in front of the judge. The judge looked at his scars and looked in his eyes. And that's where the boy went. The world is burning. The signs are all around us. And the firefighter is Jesus Christ, reaching his arms into the flames. Question for you is, will you let him take you from the fire? We'll come back on A Disciple's View. Appreciate you listening to A Disciple's View. I'm Todd Herman. I guess there's an inherent warning now, just given my fact that I intend to focus a bit on what's gone on in England. And I'll tell you really why is because it's a very frustrating thing to speak about something for so long and to see very little action taken on it. And maybe that's my fault. I don't have the reach that an Elon Musk does, even with the great privilege and honor of being on American Family Radio, this network, enormous reach, 180 radio stations. And we, though, are the informed. To a large degree, we are. I mean, the fact that you're listening to news combined with God's word means that you seek out information. And there are many people who choose to live in informational, let's say, lanes. One of the magical things about live radio is that sometimes people come out of their lane and they accidentally hear something that can add to their understanding of the world. And that's why I am going to focus a bit on what's happened in England, because I wish to provide support for the people who actually want something done. When I was beginning to meet with families of kids who'd fallen under the delusion of gender, transgenderism, the lie thereof, all those years ago, I had parents say to me, everyone thinks we're insane. Someone has told our little girl she's a boy, and no one believes us. And worse, her pediatrician agrees. The school agrees. Doctors agree. They all agree our daughter is a boy. We feel like we're crazy. I once shared with my therapist while we were going through our teen and adolescent family mental health nightmare. I once shared with my therapist, who was not a godly woman. She's a really good therapist, but not a godly woman. Suzanne was her name. What was going on with these families, because it was really affecting me. I was terrified for my daughter being in these places that she would fall victim to this. Terrified. And I made this case to Suzanne, and she said, but Todd, that's not happening. And I said, Suzanne, I beg you, read this. And I got to my, at the time, I had a little laptop bag. I was still working at Microsoft. And I pulled out this paperwork and this research, and I gave it to Suzanne. I said, will you please read this for our next session, please? And she did. And I went back and saw her, and she said, before we begin, I want to give you a free session. I cannot believe what I didn't know. I want to apologize for last week. You said you felt crazy. Todd, the world's crazy. I cannot believe that my profession's not talking about this. I read what you gave me and I'm astonished. This is the first time in a 40-year career I could look a client in the eye, and I'm doing that now, and look you in the eye and say, you were right to feel crazy, but you are not crazy. The world is crazy. Now imagine. Imagine that you are a 11-year-old and you have been groomed, sexually assaulted in the worst possible ways, and now on a regular basis, men pay to sexually assault you. Imagine that. And you're given alcohol and drugs to keep you quiet and pliant and submissive. And one day, you can't stand it anymore. So you and another girl held captive are screaming as these men violate you. And as you scream, you're hoping someone hears. Then there's a knock at the door. And it's the police. And there you are, two 11-year-old girls, naked, plied with drugs, having been assaulted. And here are seven Pakistani men, and the police come. And then the police arrest you. the girls. And you're in trouble. It happened. Nothing was done to the men. They weren't even investigated. That happened. That's the nature of this scandal. And it went on for a decade. Now, I am certain, and I can't speak for God, but I can consult his word, and so can you. And I can't speak for judgment because, praise God, I'm not the judge. That's a good thing. God is. God has already judged this. I know that there's no sin worse than any other sin. I know that the unforgivable sin of blaspheming the Holy Spirit, I'd like to focus on that one day. It's a confusing topic to me. And there are cups of wrath. God describes them. Can you imagine the cups of wrath stored up for this? Authorities choosing not to tell because they didn't want to cause a racial or religious controversy. So the updates on all this are extraordinary. All this new information, so much of it from Tommy Robinson's documentary. Tommy's sister was groomed, raped, and murdered by a rape gang. Tommy is a non-educated man. He's a rough man. And he's a man who's made it his life's mission to bring this all to light and to get justice. He recently made a documentary. The response of the British government is to put him in prison for making a documentary. Dion Miller, in the soundbite here, Dion Miller reveals that UK police were told to not get involved in the sexual exploitation of young girls.
During my service, I was awarded several letters of commendation. I received a chief constable's commendation for outstanding service and was the recipient of a bravery award from the Prime Minister at that time, which I received at number 10 Downing Street. I've not come here to speak to you today. I've come here to speak to them. The police officers of this country, on the 19th of October 2018, and I hope you are listening, former Chief Crown Prosecutor Mr. Nasir Afwas stated in an interview to the BBC Radio 4 that in 2008, the Labour government under Prime Minister Gordon Brown and Home Secretary Jackie Smith sent a circular to all police forces in this country saying that as far as these young girls who are being exploited in towns and cities, we believe that they have made an informed choice about their sexual behaviour, and therefore it is not for you police officers to get involved in.
Did you hear that? The teen girls who were groomed and repeatedly raped and sexually assaulted in ways I will not describe to you. You can look it up in the court documents. But everything you think you know is 1,000 times worse because it was so mechanical, so brutal, so racially motivated, and religiously prescribed. Sexual conquest and humiliation of your foe, religiously prescribed. It's not, quote, just the rapes and the murders and the grooming and the trafficking. It's that England was forced to open their doors to this by Brussels, the European Union. You will allow mass illegal immigration. You will. You will not review who's coming in. You will not make sure that they are in line with British values. You will not recognize the fact that radical Islam, and Islam as a whole has a problem, but radical Islam is 100% incompatible with any Western democracy. Because Islam, in that sense, is a political movement to seize governments through things like this, these humiliation rituals. So Dion Miller, this former police officer, in this speech described these memos that went out saying that those young girls, that was their choice to have this done to them. There is not a single young girl in the world who would choose to have done to them what was done to them. Not one, none has ever existed. Because this was not sex. It was torture. This woman continued, and I'm sorry for the pulsing sound. This is sourced from a public speech she gave, so it might be a little annoying on the audio front, but the information's vital. This former officer, Dion Miller, placed the blame of these rapes and murders on the British government.
Did you know that?
Save
the
blue!
They're saying save our girls, save our girls.
The child victims of rape, torture, and trafficking, which ended in sometimes in instances of murder, were purposely ignored by the British government. The inquiry into these horrific crimes against children laid blame squarely on the management of the social services, the so-called care organisations, and the police. When in reality, it was the British government who willfully allowed British children as young as 11 years old to become prey to vicious Pakistani Muslim rape gangs. To be repeatedly raped.
They allowed it to occur. Just as certainly as if they walked into a room and had the ability to stop it, they didn't. This is how the British Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, responded to the growing awareness, corresponding outrage about what is probably 250,000 British girls being groomed, raped, and trafficked by largely Pakistani Muslim men.
We've seen a devastating rise in Islamophobia, leaving people feeling fearful and unsafe in their own country. I've heard firsthand of women wearing hijab who are too scared to travel by public transport, of Muslim families being abused as they leave the mosque. The surge in Islamophobia is simply appalling. I do not want Britain to be a place where British Muslims are not able to be their whole selves, where they feel they must hide or tone down who they are for fear of being attached to views that are not their own. As leader of the Labour Party, I am indebted to the contributions of Muslim members, activists, and politicians who make our party what it is today. I'd like to thank Muslim organisations and mosques who work tirelessly to raise awareness and shine a light on the scale of Islamophobia.
Wow. If there are people screaming at Muslim people as they leave their mosques, that's wrong. You don't know that those Muslim people were involved in this, but you do know their community was. There needs to be a demand from the British people of Muslims. You are either against these abuses or you're leaving. And being against them means you name names. It means you help us find every perpetrator. Tommy Robinson, in his documentary, he was the man whose is the man whose sister was groomed and raped and murdered by these rape gangs. In his documentary, he shows evidence that the police officials got their picture taken with some of the leaders of these rape gangs. No doubt in cultural outreach. Of course, Jesus weeps about this, but I believe there are cups of wrath, the likes of which we can't imagine, built up around this, aimed not just at the perpetrators, but at the enablers. The chief enabler, in my judgment, is Keir Starmer. He, the prime minister, had been a prosecutor with the opportunity to prosecute crimes like this, but he chose to not. Again, this is him speaking. British Prime Minister Keir Starmer pretends people who want a full inquiry into Britain's rape gangs are, quote, jumping on a bandwagon of the far right.
And when politicians, and I mean politicians, who sat in government for many years, are casual about honesty, decency, truth, and the rule of law, calling for inquiries because they want to jump on a bandwagon of the far right, then that affects politics, because a robust debate can only be based on the true facts.
He is saying that demanding a full investigation into this is simply right-wing politics. He is utterly spiritually captured, and I have to believe he's paid money to take these positions. And he's utterly spiritually captured. Of course, we're forced to pray for him because we're Christians. God says we have to. But we could also pray for justice, even as we know God has already delivered it, unless he repents. Is he possible of repenting? Is he capable of it? British police and a psychologist showed up at this man's house because he posted on social media that Christians must stand up. We don't have time to play the soundbite. But it happened. A man simply posted on social media, Christians must stand up, after another Islamist attack. So they sent not just a police officer, but a psychiatric nurse to the man's house just to make sure he's okay. When we come back, I told you, I think last week, about this new study that confirms massive amounts of human DNA in the COVID shots. There's a super interesting detail. You will not believe who found this data and who proved it in an FDA lab. You will not believe it. We'll get to that next. I'm Todd Herman. This is The Disciples View. Welcome back to Disciples View. We'll get to the Tower of Babylon here in just a minute. There is a new report out, and it's the result of some intense scientific experiments. And it turns out, as I think I talked with you about this last week, that the FDA's White Oak campus in Maryland found, and they're saying it's residual DNA levels in the COVID shots that exceeds regulatory safety limits by 6 to 470 times. Residual implies accidental. And that can happen. I mean, human beings touch the products that end up in these shots. That's why there is an allowable limit. I don't believe it's accidental. There's been too much hidden. The FDA wanting you to wait 75 years to be able to see the raw data on the safety protocols put in place for these shots. They joined Pfizer, Moderna, trying to make sure that you had to wait 75 years. In other words, you'd be dead. You'd never see them. This generation would never see them. Absolutely no reason for that. It can't be defended based upon national security. They can't be defended based upon any form of morality or legality. They just didn't want you to know what they did to you. That they knew the shots were deadly. I believe they knew there was DNA in it. It's my belief, based upon the pattern recognition and their obsession with continuing this experiment of mRNA, that they purposely put human DNA in many of these strains. Well, why would I say that? Here's why. Because we know that some of these DNA strands match a DNA sequence patented by pharma 3 years before the shots were forced into people's bodies. They created a strand of DNA with a purpose. It is a unique strand. It doesn't exist in nature, but it exists in the shots. So thank God that the FDA figured this out. How'd that happen? Maybe it was some intrepid scientists at the FDA who said, you know what, we're not supposed to do this, but we're going rogue. We think it's very important that the American people, in fact, the people around the globe know what's in these shots, so we're going to test it for human DNA. Maybe that's what happens. But remember this. The FDA is a pharmaceutical company. it gets 40% of its revenues from pharma, or 40% of its budget. The CDC is a pharmaceutical company. Their scientists participate in profits through intellectual property, through patents. They're both pharmaceutical companies. So what happened? Well, before we get to what happened and how, this is what Kevin McKernan, a former director of the Human Project, as he looked at these findings about this so-called residual DNA in these COVID tests, he, again, former director of the Human Genome Project, he said, these findings are significant not just for what they reveal, but for what they have, what they suggest has been concealed from public scrutiny. Why has the FDA kept these data under wraps? Commenting further, he talked about the process that was used to figure this out. He said the qubit analysis can under-detect DNA percent when enzymes are used during sample preparation. Additionally, plasmid prep in this set does not sufficiently capture small DNA fragments, in underestimation. In other words, it might not be, quote, just 470% more DNA allowed than regulators allow in these shots. It might be 2,800%. How did this happen? A brave rogue FDA scientist? Remember when the Lord Jesus said that we truly appreciate him? We must be childlike in our management. Kids did this. The study was done by kids. High school kids. Marianne DeMasse wrote at Substack. She points this out. Quote, the study was undertaken by student researchers under the supervision of FDA scientists. The vaccine files were sourced from BEI Resources, a trusted supplier affiliated with the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, previously headed by Anthony Fauci. Recently published in the Journal of High School Science, the peer-reviewed study challenges years of dismissals by regulatory authorities who had previously labeled concerns about excessive DNA combinations and contamination as baseless. The same organizations who said concerns about myocarditis and pericarditis are baseless and later were forced to admit it. The same organizations said safe and effective. I continue to believe there's going to come a moment in presidency where the Muckenberg media, academia, and corrupt scientific officials turn on Trump and make him responsible for the deaths that they'll suddenly start reporting because of the mRNA injections. They will hang it around the neck of President Trump, and Tony Fauci will be able to say, well, we knew we were violating some scientific principles in terms of the speed of the research, but President Trump, he got our hands. I pray that doesn't happen, but I continue to fear it will. As frustrating as it can be sometimes on this.
As a parent, you set rules in your home for good reason. Most likely, they focus on things like honesty, obedience, and respect for others. But what happens when your teen blows right through all the rules? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Rules are guidelines that are placed around behavior so that families operate within their personal belief system. But all the rules you put in place doesn't make a difference if there aren't consequences to back them up. It's the consequences that'll teach your children to learn right from wrong and move from selfish to unselfish behavior. That's what you're aiming for as a parent, right? So don't keel when the pressure's on. Follow through, as needed, with the consequences.
Want more help from Mark Gregston? Find books and other resources online at parentingtodaysteens.org. That's parentingtodaysteens.org.
On this program, and we just had a technical problem about that. Sorry about that. On this program, we thank the Lord for placing supposedly wise people on tall towers of shaking sand with our feature called The Tower of Babbling.
you know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents The Tower of Babbling.
Is it a boy or a girl? It's a they by Lindsay Harriet. This book is all about welcoming a new baby into the family and not knowing how that baby will identify when they grow up. So we're not going to be assuming their gender.
Babbling indeed. Three sound bites in today's Tower Babbling. NBC's Christian Welker questioned Chucky Schumer about his role in pretending Joe Biden isn't cognitively impaired. She also
Leader
pretends
Schumer, what do you
she-
say to Americans who feel as though you and other top Democrats misled them about President Biden's mental acuity?
Nope. Look, we didn't. And let's look at President Biden. He's had an amazing record. The legislation we passed, one of the most significant groups of legislation since Lyndon Johnson's Great Society.
We didn't? Well, you can play clip after clip after clip of him doing it. He's still doing it. Incidentally, Christian Welker deserves some credit for asking that question. She was also one of the debate moderators. As Biden fumbled and stumbled and was clearly not cognitively there, and during that debate, she could have said, President Biden, are you okay? She could have. She experienced it. She could have, through her analysis, said, I don't think he's okay. She didn't because she chose to hide it. Next soundbite in today's Tower Babbling. CBS Mornings pretends there's something unique about a middle-aged white dude with a sexual kink becoming a congressman.
And history will be made when Sarah McBride takes the oath of office as the first openly transgender member of the U.S. House. At 34 years old, the Democrat has quickly risen in Delaware's political ranks, and now she will serve as the state's sole representative in Washington.
Absolutely happy to pretend he's a woman. Absolutely happy to issue forth absolute babble like this. Openly so-called transgender. The only way to be so-called transgender is to say you're actually the opposite sex. It can only be open. You could doubt it and think it, be confused about it, but because you are a dude, it only becomes open once you say, I'm confused. The Mockingbird Media refuses to recognize the fact that in this country, that ploy is no longer working. Praise God. It lost the Democrats the election, that issue, and issues like it. Last up in today's Tower Babbling. In Britain, Nigel Farage pretends Britons can exist by embracing Islam.
We have a Muslim population in Britain growing by about 75% every 10 years. Right? That's just where we are. Mm-hmm. If we politically alienate the whole of Islam, we will lose. We'll lose.
So how does one include
them? Will lose. By 2050, goodness knows what kind of a terrible state we're going to be in.
You can't win by becoming the thing against which you should fight. And Britain must fight radical Islam. And that's a wrap for today's Tower of Babbling.
Young black kids growing up in the Bronx who don't even know what the word a computer is. They don't know. They don't know these things.
That was the Tower of Babbling on A Disciple's View.
Let's just get a note before we get to the person note here from Pamela Gibson. She writes, Dear Todd, I love listening to your show on AFR. Just a heads up, today as you attempted to spread light on the COVID jab, the radio station I listened to you on, KAYK 88.5, scrambled your message. Keep telling the truth. Hey, Pamela, just to let you know, the fine people at KAYK didn't do anything wrong. We had a technical problem in the control room at AFR. Randy leapt on it. An engineer ran into the studio. We took care of it. It was on the network side. So it was simply a technical error. And if it wasn't, I would absolutely tell you the truth if it wasn't that. On a personal note today, it's sometimes hard doing this segment. Because sometimes there's things that brew in the heart that you try to figure out how to tell and communicate, and you know it's going to take a period of time. And so I will simply tell you this. I know that there are people who listen to this program for hope. I know that. I know that because I get the notes from you. And I want you to know how meaningful it is to me to receive notes saying, when you remind us that God is not surprised and that he told us there'd be times like these, I feel hope. And I appreciate that through the program. I know that there are people who tune in sometimes to have the world made sense of biblically, and I wish I could do a better job of it. You know, I'm still growing in my faith and particularly in my knowledge of the Bible. I wish I could do a better job of it, and it means the world to me when you send in messages of support in that regard. And then there's this. I don't know how to communicate this because it happens so rarely to people. But it happened again. And dang it, it is difficult to explain this without seeming ungrateful or prideful, but I must explain it. I met recently a listener and his family, and the man wept when he met me. And I embraced him and thanked him, and he said, "Your show means so much to me." And I had the opportunity to look him in the eye and say, "Brother, have you ever wondered why? It's not me. I can't call you to listen to the show. I don't have that power. But if you're really this touched, then this is God calling to you. That can be the only purpose. The world does not need another commentator, opinion maker. We don't need it." I got the opportunity to ask the brother, "Where do you go to church?" "I haven't started that yet." And I said, "My friend, I think that you are experiencing through our show what you should be experiencing through church. I hope that you'll do that. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Until God gives us permission to speak again together, may his peace, which transcends all your understanding, wash over you and your families." On behalf of AFR and Randy, I'm Todd Herman, and this has been A Disciple's View.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.